Yeah. So yesterday, there was some argument. I have no idea what the context was, but it was a couple of superstars of the web.
Heavyweights.
Big ballers.
It was
big baller brand.
Joanne Reed, MSNBC pundit, arguing with our old friend, the baseball crank.
Our own baseball crank.
Our very own. Yes. And to me, scanning the conversation that people were laughing at, it just read extremely like anime dialogue, and I couldn't get it out of my head. So
there's something about the cadence of these two and like their statements to each other that sounds like it's been translated between two or three different languages
and then back again. Exactly. And it was just, and it's just kind of impotent insults going nowhere, like preparing for some big
show.
You
could just imagine the action lines radiating off of their mouths as
and
they
so
said these things.
It really did seem like an anime, and I thought, what if it was an anime?
What if it was a bloody anime?
How would that go?
I think it would go a little something like this.
It's my nemesis, Joanne Reed.
No one cares who you are. The baseball disguise is superfluous.
Disguise? I've used my own name on the web for 17 years, ma'am. Next time, dispense with the you did X for those who did no such thing.
You jumped into my mentions uninvited, baseball. Show yourself out the same way you came in if you don't like the response.
Yeah? I prefer factual accuracy, so I shall disengage from what you are offering instead. For the moment.
How can I miss you when I don't actually care that you were even here?
Did someone say tentacles? This is Kurt Eichenwald, local journalist at large. I've heard there's a big scoop about tentacles.
It's another one of our combatants. He's under the ring.
Oh my God, he is here. Mecha Douthat. Everything you are doing is wrong and sinful. Desist at once.
You will not stop me from using all the birth control pills I want, Mecha Douthat.
That's what you think. Prepare to be destroyed.
I will eat them as numerously as the mice on the northern winds.
Prepare to taste my wrath and my sanctimonious prayers.
Go away, baseball.
That's good.
Go away, baseball.
Where were we? Come Ghost. Welcome to the show. There's your preview right there. There's your preview.
A couple
drop.
Years ago, I was staying downtown near the Bradbury building.
Oh.
And I was staying in one of those old flop houses that have been turned into a boutique hotel.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, and I slept on the floor in one of them. And then the next day, I'm looking around, and I'm thinking, where's that hotel where that lady went into the cistern? And then I found out it was the one I was in.
And that hotel, what is its name? Has a really fucked up history.
Yeah.
Richard
Ramirez lived there for a bit.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, but like really bad things have gone down in that hotel.
But I remember being like, oh, I want to see it. It's so cool. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. They changed its name. That's where I slept last night. I hadn't even been aware of it. The water did not taste
so
weird.
You showered.
I might have, yes.
Oh, my God.
With some backpacker in there.
That's the beginning of a really bad direct to DVD Canadian horror film.
Death Shower.
Well, the Ace Hotel, as boutique-y as it is, was very much a flop house.
Yeah.
And when I the first time I stayed there, it is so much like a Supermax cell the rooms, because the bathroom is right there, and I was like, why is the bathroom? They go, oh, none of those rooms had bathroom. It was all like one big
hall.
Way to change it to make it a hotel.
Yeah,
that's when America was like more together, when we all had to use the same bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. Squatted of the same hole.
Yeah.
When a bunch of rough trade drifters all lived and had to wait in line to piss.
That was
at night you would sleep on a bench with a string across you to keep you from falling forward. In the morning they would just cut that.
Yep.
Yeah, rise and shine.
That was Obama's speech in 2004 at the DNC. Let me be clear. rent boys, classic style hobos, yeah. leather daddies, all sharing the same bathroom. Yeah. There's no red or blue America.
Yep. Hubert Selby showed us the way, and that's where I want to take it. A lot of repressed, angry, gay men. And
Martin Luther King had a dream. I have a requiem for it.
And I will answer the question, who killed Teddy Bear? We will find out. Sal Mineo will dance in a half shirt.
I want an America that's equal parts Ronald Reagan, but Tom Finland.
That's a good intro.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Oh,
yeah. I should probably just start the show. Yeah. It's Chapo Trap House. We're now. I think this is actually the earliest episode we've ever recorded.
Easily
the earliest. Yeah,
well, we did not get into podcasting to get up at 9 a.m.
I know, yeah. man. I'm sorry, you supermodels. I had to rouse you out of bed before noon, but this was literally the only time I can do this.
Oh, we much appreciate it.
I am moving and getting married in 28 days.
Oh my
so
God.
I could not have Mazel more. Tov. Thank you.
Yeah.
Wow. On the move? Yes. but I could not be more. I've never been. I'm so stressed out that I'm actually, what I'm worried is when I get beyond this level of stress, is it going to be like a weird drug come down? Because the stress is now I'm just used to this.
Yeah.
I can relate, Patton. I moved and then 2 months later I had to, you know, buy a PS4 and figure out like what the controls are like on the new DualShock.
Like rearranging your whole life.
I'm still recovering from it.
Why don't
it's like life goes on, you know?
Why don't you and I go sit in that couch, let him lie down. this isn't cool. So.
Well, in case you hadn't figured out it already, the reason for the early episode is a very special guest, star of the silver screen, television, stage, and now our podcast. Yeah,
author.
Thank you.
Author of
motivational
speaker, entrepreneur, CEO.
CEO at me, yeah. Boss at me.
Men's rights attorney.
OT level 3, clear.
Level 3, yep. Got all clear.
Patton Oswalt.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for joining us.
This show, weirdly enough, this show and You Must Remember This are my two sanity lifelines every week.
Oh,
because
that's cool.
It's you guys are embracing the insanity of right now, and then You Must Remember This is a show that says, but things were always actually this screwed up, so don't just, like,
yeah.
you
yeah.
go, people look back and oh, the 40, no, it was off, it was chaos.
You need context. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. It was amazing that stuff didn't get blown up back then.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Things are actually weirdly better in terms of control based on back then. Think of the people that were in charge of nukes and stuff and what they believed.
Oh, God. Yeah. Kurt LeMay.
My God.
He thought that nuclear weapons were actually good for the environment. Seriously, he said, he had a speech, and this was when he was running for vice president as George Wallace's VP pick in 68. He said, if you go to the Bikini Atoll and you go to these places where we did tests, you will see an amazing proliferation of flora and fauna as a direct result of the nuclear exposure.
Amazing proliferation of kaijus.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Anyone who watches Ghidorah, the three-headed monster, will know that.
It's funny how no one can actually attack his argument. I'm just saying.
Yeah, jury's still out.
Yeah, it was a lot of ad hominem. Oh, bombs away with Curtis LeMay. Nice ad hom. Yeah.
I mean,
not addressing my arguments.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Back then was cool because 103% of people like drunk drove.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The drunk
driving
was amazing.
They sprayed children with DDT just to make a point.
Yeah. They threw lawn darts at their kids, took caffeine pills so they could have more affairs.
The CIA was paid to just give random people LSD and see what happened.
Yeah. Everything had lead in it. Everything.
Oh, yeah.
Everything had a tiny piece on it that would shoot on a spring and go down someone's throat. It was just a gallery of death traps. That was America until about the 90s, basically.
Yeah, the most popular toy for kids who wanted to play like settlers or cowboys and Indians was just an actual working musket.
Yeah. Well, no, they did have, I remember a toy where it was pretty much a working bow and arrow.
Yes.
And that what they didn't dull the it was just...
That's what happened to Ralph Cifaretto's kid, unfortunately.
Well, and also, not only people were drunk driving. Drunk driving was a funny scene in movies over and over again. Hooper, Bad News Bears. Bad News Bears, he's drunk driving kids in a convertible. No one's belted. And he's just, and you're like, ha, this guy's hilarious. Yeah, and he's so drunk.
And it's like, it's not funny. It's cool.
It is cool. It's the cool guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, there's a movie called If You Could See What I Hear with Mark Singer. He plays a blind musician. And there's a scene where he's blind and he's drunk, and he and his friend, his he has a friend named his last name is Sly, and he smokes a pipe because he's his crazy sidekick, and he's driving his friend around, and he's drunk, but he's also blind, and it's like it's funny. It's like
see
a funny,
those two things.
Funny.
I think those things would
double. Yeah, thank you.
Those math. Things would cancel each other out, and you'd actually be a perfect driver.
Yeah, yeah, like it's Stevie Wonder.
But just science.
We would just get blind people drunk. we could find the God molecule.
So actually, this is a good segue from the insanity of yesteryear.
Yes.
To the insanity of the present moment, because this is a big thing we want to discuss with you. I mean, this is a story.
I'm in my BTA.
Yeah,
it's really great.
This is a story. This is like sort of breaking news that we were following intensely yesterday.
We've been covering this for the past 24 hours.
Yeah, we've been paying close attention to this story because I think in a lot of ways it does kind of represent a thesis statement about like everything we've been talking about over the last 150 episodes.
It's like being
or so.
The guy in PCU when the Bridge Too Far comes on. And he can stop watching TV because the thesis has been proved.
Okay. Wow. And, nice pull.
Yeah. It's a classic. It was the last time that Jeremy Piven didn't have hair in a movie where he played a college like sophomore. It was amazing.
Oh my God! Yeah,
it was weird. We were all just supposed to forget about that.
But the story that we've been following that we want to talk about is now become known as Sichuan Gate.
Yes,
Patton, if you've been following, are you familiar with this?
I love that now Twitter lets you piece things together. You can reverse engineer it from the haiku of what's trending. And so and correct me if I'm wrong, Rick and Morty mentioned a Szechuan sauce that then people demanded from McDonald's, and McDonald's flippantly said, we don't have it. And then it's caused a huge...
Okay,
It was literally number one trending topic.
Here's what happened.
Well, what happened.
In the premiere episode for this season, which was...
I am so behind on all my TV right
now. Everybody was so crazy because it was
guys, you know, I'm getting married and I'm moving. And my fiance, she's pretty amazing.
You didn't have time to watch your shows.
I don't have time to watch...
Your stories.
That's true love.
This is what women do to you. This is what they do to you.
It is what they... You know what?
They don't just suck your biological essence. It's also your cultural essence.
Oh my God, Dave Sim was right.
When you finally get around to watching it, you're not going to be able to share memes with your friends because they're all going to be well past it.
Oh man,
that's what love does to you, man.
So in the first episode, by not watching, you're getting dumber.
Because that show is smart, and you learn from it. And if you don't watch it, you don't know things.
So tell me what happened.
First episode, Rick mentions this Szechuan dipping sauce that was a promotional for. Item for Mulan in 1997.
Right.
And it was like basically a sweet and sour dipping sauce. And he says, it was delicious, Morty, and they don't make it anymore. And at the end of the episode, he calls back to it and goes, my mission for this season, Morty, is to get that Szechuan sauce. I love it. It's the best. Parenthetically, it was not mentioned the rest of the season. It was a joke. Yeah. But the fans of the show, tethered to reality as they are, tightly feet planted firmly on the ground, decided that they really wanted this sauce that all of them were too young to have ever had themselves. They weren't having real nostalgic yearnings for it. The cartoon man told them it was good.
The majority of them were born after the sauce.
Like, the function of the joke was that this is an extremely arbitrary and esoteric
like the
reference.
Very joke.
The joke is this is not worth
the joke is
your
this
feet
is
about.
Not worth caring
right.
about. But they're like, actually, I'm a genius who watches Rick and Morty, and I understand the Straussian subtext, which is that it's actually the best food ever made, and I demand it. And so somebody in my DMs claims they know the guy who had this idea, who is going to be fired tomorrow, thought, hey, it'd be fun if we just put out some limited run, give selected stores like 20 packets and some posters and have a fun little promotion. But when people found out that certain stores were going to have actual Szechuan sauce, they bum-rushed every location. There were two-hour lines all over the place. A lot of the stores said they didn't have it. A lot of the stores, they ran out immediately. And so there were hundreds and thousands of insanely pissed-off nerds screaming about how McDonald's did not get them the Szechuan sauce that they had been promised.
Never get between a virgin and their condiments.
Yeah. No. Yeah. People were fighting. The police were called police at were called several locations to guard the McDonald's.
Yes.
If they had more upper body strength, that could have been a real threat.
Yeah.
That is going to be a Red October.
But no, I think it will be, because this is a real revelation I had about this, is that, so you're a young subject of late capitalism. It doesn't work for you in any meaningful way. Your life is shit. You have three or four awful part-time jobs. You have no health insurance. You have $500,000 in unsecured student loan debt
that you'll never pay off.
You have no future in any meaningful sense. All of the avenues that you've been brought up to believe were going to lead to prosperity and stability in your life, gone. But the one thing that late capitalism promise is that every stupid, shitty, nostalgic or faux nostalgic indulgence you can have is at yours at your fingertips. And if it, my life is a fucking neoliberal hell, but I can't even get a fucking cup of Szechuan sauce.
Yeah, exactly.
Why the fuck am I still allowing the system to control me? We should burn it to the fucking ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As Virgil pointed out, there were several incidents of police being called to guard the McDonald's and break up fights. Over the and like, you know, just pressed up against the glass like Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Just
like, but, you know, it, the thing
and
is,
I was just imagining, like, you know, the riot police like firing those like beanbag shotgun shell rounds at like, you know, wave. It's sort of like, you know, death wave style attacks on the Szechuan sauce, but it was like, as Matt was saying, it's also like a real lesson in artificial scarcity, because they only gave like 20 packets of Szechuan sauce to each location, and people have found now. Like, locations are just like, we never got the Szechuan sauce. People were pointing out a lot of this stuff is ending up like on a secondary market being sold for like $750.
If you were minimum wage McDonald's and you see 5,000 nerds outside your door for a small packet of these things, you can do the math.
Oh, yeah.
And be like, yeah, they're gone. Or we didn't get them.
Right. And now they're in the. I just love the fact that in a couple of months, there's going to be some new employee at McDonald's, and there'll be a lunch rush on a Friday. And then at around 2:15, he'll like turn to his manager and go, man, that Friday lunch rush is crazy. And then it'll be like the night watch guy. Let me tell you about the Szechuan sauce thing. It'll be that weird,
you know, nothing,
cold, howling, like, it was a couple of months ago.
I picture a Sam Elliott type.
Yeah, exactly.
Getting wistful.
It'll be a Sam Elliott. Let me explain something to you.
There were hundreds of them. Nerds like you never see. A lot of them were dressed up like my favorite cartoon show. Yeah. They had blue hair. They had scientific coats for some reason.
That was the one day that I prayed to God and also was convinced he didn't exist.
I thought I was as depressed as I was going to get just watching the footage of these people getting mad and freaking out on Twitter and yelling. And the people talking about how many hours they'd driven. Somebody drove six hours from Canada.
No,
somebody pointed this out, and it really just put me into a deeper freeze of depression. Is, okay, yeah, you spent 6 hours to get to this place. You waited in line for 2 hours. That sounds pathetic, but what the fuck else were these people going to be doing?
Yeah, like, no, exactly.
Oh, no, now I'm not. All that time I could have been on the Rick and Morty subreddit explaining how Rick is actually an objectivist.
Oh my God, is that how they're going to control people in late capitalism? It just give them nostalgic missions?
Yes.
To distract them from the horror.
People are getting pissed about how like they can't pay for literally anything, and they have their
nostalgic
missions.
I mean,
isn't that kind of already happening, though? Like, have you been to a movie theater lately?
Yeah,
like,
that's
just all, we're just watching very terrible reboots.
One thing to give people nothing but nostalgia, but yeah, the next step is giving them little treasure hunts.
Here's my idea. The U.S. government, like Trump Care, can create like an actual like ancient pirate ship in a pirate cove, like in Goonies, and be like, the healthcare is there, and seven lucky Americans, if they go on the quest, can find it and get covered.
Well, it is weird how when someone is president, there is a thing that person affects the zeitgeist. So when Nixon was president, all of our films and TV shows were very paranoid.
Yeah, paranoid.
And then when Reagan was, it was very patriotic, Rambo. Bush, it was all torture porn. Torture. Yeah. Not just torture porn, heroic torture, 24 and stuff like that. And now I'm noticing, and this hasn't happened yet, but not in a big way, but I saw the Florida Project a couple weeks ago. I saw Brawl and Cell Block 99.
Well, I'm looking forward to that one.
And these are two totally different. The Florida Project is this gorgeous, neorealistic film. Brawl and Cell Block 99 is a action, gritty, but both of them very much address people being hopeless under late capitalism and having literally nothing to live for. And that motivates the plot because it's so inescapable what you're seeing people are going through. I think that that is going to start leaking into our pop culture. There will be a summer blockbuster where the plot is about someone that I have nothing to lose. Let's just go do this. And that will spur the action. It won't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It won't be these international globetrotters. It'll be somebody going, you know, I spent my welfare check for this month's worth of food and then something happened and now I got, you know, people can... I'm telling you, it's just, I'm seeing it leak into everywhere.
It's going to be the only relatable heroic motive for people anymore.
It was, I think it was one of the reasons that really people grabbed on to Stranger Things. There's the 80s nostalgia.
Yeah, yeah.
That scene at the beginning where Winona Ryder is negotiating with her boss, like, if you can give me 1 week advance, then I can keep the, then I, and I think people are doing that so much now that I think that pulled a lot of people into the reality of the show. The fact that they did the one thing that Stephen King does, which he really understands the economics of living on nothing.
Yes.
And that's a part of the plot, and it makes the horror seem that much more real.
And we're past the point where, because the big joke for films and TV for, you know, a generation has been, what the fuck do these people do for work? How do they have these houses? Like, they're just hanging around these big houses, and they have no means of support.
And people are like, nah,
bombshell wife and the big house everything.
People just, there's no more, you can't accept that anymore.
Oh, yeah.
The Simpsons at least acknowledged it, though.
Oh, they acknowledge it right from the get-go.
Yeah, yeah.
And also that as whimsical, and it's a great show, but as whimsical a show as Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, acknowledge the fact that in mid first season, oh, you know, you're broke. Like all this money you saved, and then you've gone to wherever she moved to where the wait, God, West Covina. She moved to West Covina, and in midway first season, they really, because what they hid in the first five episodes was, They really were keeping track of how much money she was spending, and they go, and now you're broke.
Oh,
and it became a plot thing. And I was like, I can't, in the midst of this fantastical musical show, they were being economically, you know, real as to what would happen. And I think you're right. Less people are going to accept the, oh, they live in this insanely art design department, and who cares what these 20-somethings do? No, this isn't real. This is bullshit.
Yeah, they don't like portray what real people's lives are like. Like, no one ever opens their wallet and a fly comes out. they never look at their fellow man and see them slowly turn into a steak that's talking.
When was the last time you saw a movie or a TV show where a character wore nothing but a barrel with straps?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's what real people go through.
Yeah.
Well, I also think that even when wealth is present, media is more likely to acknowledge it now. Like with BoJack, you spend the whole time watching it and being like, man, if I ever get really depressed again, I hope I do it with a lot of money.
Right.
That sounds much better than my history of not having money and being depressed. There must be a way to sort of arrange it so that I'm only depressed when I'm really wealthy.
Yeah.
But Pat, like when you were talking about like how we can sort of the presidential eras kind of set a tone for the culture at large. And if you like read into, like you said, the Bush administration, it was either torture porn or like heroic depictions of torture, like Jack Bauer or whatever. And then there was a couple, like Hollywood had a few sort of aborted attempts to like confront the Iraq war and sort of variously like, you know, movies like Stop Loss or like In the Valley of Ella or whatever that, you know, mostly were unremarked upon and just kind of didn't really go anywhere. I think it's interesting if you think about like the Obama era, wasn't that like really when like the superhero movie franchise really became like a huge thing? And I think that also reflected the national mood of sort of wanting to be saved by a heroic figure or becoming like less serious, sort of more childlike in a way.
I remember I met Sergio Aragonés, the guy that did Gru and all the marginalia stuff in Mad, and he was talking about superheroes because he would always draw superheroes kind of fat and silly. He never did anything serious. He would always, and I was like, hey, I love your stuff, but you've never done like a serious superhero, because he said, superheroes to me equal despair. It equals, I want something to come out of the clouds with a magic ring or, you know, eye beams and just fix
it's
all this stuff
because
I can't.
It's from desperation.
I can't do this.
It's this candy-coated desperation.
Yes.
I was wondering, like, why Wonder Woman has resonated so much culturally, because, like, really, the movie itself, it's just, like, oh, imagine if a woman was like really strong.
Because feminism is stalled.
Right.
That's
right.
Why. Culturally, because like we've achieved a sort of like cultural parity, but the wage gap is still there. The sort of social dynamics are still there. So they're like, well, fuck it. We'll do blockbuster feminism, and that will make up for the fact that it still kind of sucks in a unique way to be a woman.
I will say about that movie, the two things I really liked about it was they were addressing what you just said, which is she is saving the world, and the majority of men are still like, whatever, I could have done that. Like no one's acknowledging her. And then they also do this great thing. Where she grows up on Themyscira, this island paradise where they've taught her a paradigm that is perfect, and then like a homeschooled kid that then goes out in the world, it's like, oh, this was bullshit. They were like, even my, you know, it's a way of saying, yes, feminism has some amazing ideals, but let's also look at them in the real world and then adjust
and
find a better way.
It's not useful if it's not integrative.
Yes, exactly.
We haven't been able to integrate these ideas, you know, through culture and the mediums that we've been trying to at this point, because it's still, I mean, like, the internet runs on female misery. Like, clearly, feminism has not accomplished, like, what we thought it could. But also, like, people are just super nostalgic right now because, like, I think the Make America Great Again thing and all the nostalgia stuff is, like, coinciding.
I saw this picture of, like, it was Gal Gadot at Comic-Con, and it was, like, a six-year-old girl walking up to her. It was, like, someone's, like, tweet, and it said, you think these movies aren't important? Look at this. And I was, like, yeah, children have never loved superhero movies until now.
She's in front of a girl. There's a girl there.
But there was, like, this weird psychosis to it where people acted like this was the first thing that, like, little girls ever had to enjoy that was, like, I think it was, like, also psychosis of the prophecy failing, of Hillary Clinton failing and this vision of the world they had being failed to implement, having a failure to implement. And there having to be, like, as you said, this escape. For most people culturally, it's going to be, you know, a guy going crazy because they have no resources, or like when they make the Thriller movie about running out of the cartoon sauce. But for the dead enders who really lost their minds by the death of Clintonism and the death of, like, this type of liberalism, I think Wonder Woman was a very reassuring security blanket to them. And they had to pretend it was politically significant in this way. It really wasn't.
Well, but also there's this obsession with girls now. We've given up on, like, adult women. They're like, look, we're all miserable. We're not going to be okay. What we have to do now is provide good role models, because that's the problem, is that women don't have role models. And as long as they have role models, they'll be fine. But the other thing, like, that never rang true for me, partially because, like, you know what? Generally, you can look around and see impressive women, even if they aren't particularly professionally successful. Like, that's a very bougie thing to say. You know, you're not going to have women to look up to unless they're literally a superhero.
Exactly.
But then
A woman that is holding down an above minimum wage job, but still, no, they're not billionaires. They're not franchising out. But that is so impressive these days. No one looks at that.
We're the real superheroes. Yeah. The small business owners. Yeah.
We started from
super
scratch.
Villain of government regulation.
I think anyone who can wash their bed sheets more than once every 2 years is a superhero.
But, like, I don't know. I just back to this idea that, like, sort of our pop culture has this kind of, like, delayed fuse effect for, like, what's going on politically. Mm-hmm. Felix, I'm fond of your idea that American culture couldn't really fully metabolize or like the Bush administration until Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, yeah,
which
is
like, Sons of Anarchy is like our displaced feelings about the Bush administration, like, about 5 or 6 years after.
Allow me to explain. cue Adam Curtis music. During, we could never really, as you said, look at movies about the Iraq War or the War on Terror, but we knew there was this mass death going on in the background and these good intentions. Right. So we thought that was how we had to process it, even though they weren't. But every movie about it bombed. Thereafter, though, during the Obama years, there was a show. There was a show about an individualistic man, a man with with good intentions to civilize the world around him, but ended up getting thousands of people killed in his idiotic weapon deals and schemes. And that man's name was Jack Steller. And we could not process directly like the victims of war crimes or the consequences of imperialism, but we could...
The Bizlats and the One-Niners. We could figure that out.
We could figure that out, and we could figure out imperialism as, oh, you know, well, we had the best of intentions, and we... We had a good plan, but, you know, Jax's mom is a total fucking bitch. Tara was being unfaithful. And, yeah, that's why Jackson was the biggest name for boys in America in, like, 2010.
No, the Sons of Anarchy Motorcycle Club was our, like, sublimated way of dealing with the Bush cabinet.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah.
Ron Perlman was Dick Cheney. You know, Charlie Human was Bush. Yeah.
Bobby Elvis, Colin Powell.
And that's true. And Tig is Rumsfeld.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then whoever, what was that prospect's name? That was Rove. Everyone's just pissing on him.
Yeah.
That was Turd Blossom.
Yeah. Alex Nichols, Lone Option, also had another theory about displacing, like, that Bush or Trump figure of sort of patriarchal domination, is that Tim Allen movies only appear, Tim Allen TV shows only appear in the absence of that figure. So in the cuddly 90s of, you know, I Feel Your Pain, Clinton, you had Home Improvement. Then that show left just as Bush took office. And then when Obama came in office, that Last Man Standing show shows up where he's just yelling about safe spaces. And then that show got canceled. And a lot of these conservatives actually think it's some sort of liberal conspiracy to get rid of this.
They're so mad about
the cancellation of Last Man Standing. But what it really is Trump's here. We don't need Last Man Standing anymore. It's superfluous. We already have Last Man Standing, and he's in the White House.
Yeah.
Tim Allen has actually gone on TV since then and said, like, the show is canceled because there's nothing more dangerous than, like, a funny, relatable conservative male.
Oh, yeah, Stephen Paddock proved that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're, I don't know, not watching your drink, yeah, but...
I'm sorry, but I can't...
Well, no, he's right, because that thing doesn't exist. So if it does exist in this world, that means we've cracked through some Lovecraftian level of chaos, and the old ones are coming back.
I don't know.
Allen is the gate. Allen is the king. The door is open.
There's nothing more relatable than narking on all your friends to avoid jail time for cocaine dealing.
Also, his second show was, he was like a vlogger. He like
what?
He worked at, he did like PR for a sporting goods store, but he was just, he made vlogs. Which, yeah, I'm sorry, like, you're a millennial,
you're a
Tim
millennial.
Allen.
Yeah. You're a piece of shit millennial.
But of course he's vlogging and living in a house that is, again, overly, that no one could afford. Yep. Can I tell you my really goofy Lovecraft story?
Yes.
Really quick. Years ago, I'm such a Lovecraft nerd, I took a gig at Lupo's in Providence just so I could, and it paid, I mean, to get the plane ticket and for what I was getting paid, it canceled each other out, but it was a free trip, and I wanted to go to Swan Point Cemetery and visit Lovecraft's grave. So I take a cab during the day, and it was like light rain, kind of windy. I'm like, oh, this is so perfect. So then the cab driver is driving me around Swan Point. I can't figure out where the grave is, where it is, and so finally, and a couple times we kept passing this woman. She was like a park ranger type, or like the attendant in the cemetery. And she's like this squat, like mid-20s black woman in her vest, standing by her car, you know. And I'm like, let me pull over and ask her. Can we just pull over here? He pulls over, and I'm not exaggerating. I open the door. I step out of the car. You know, she looks at me for this length of time, and she goes, "You want that monster man?" And she just sort of pointed. She looks right after, like, "Oh yeah, one of these guys, right over there, man." And I realize she's right near the Phillips family, like, obelisk.
Yeah.
And that's what she does. She looks for nerds. Oh yeah, right over there.
She's,
you want
professional
that Cthulhu bullshit?
Nerd.
It's right over there.
Professional nerd wrangler.
She was.
They need to helicopter her into one of these Rick and Morty riots. One ranger, one riot. Calm down, nerds.
You need the loser sauce over there.
And then, of course, I went there, and there's like foreign coins on top of the I Am Providence and the little scraps of poetry, and you know, it was really eerie.
I actually, over the summer, I went to my cousin's wedding, and I I could see from my hotel like room balcony a cemetery, Ernest Hemingway's grave in Idaho. And I went there, and it was a similar thing.
Is that Ketchum?
No. Where's it's like buried? It's in Sun Valley. I forget the name of the town, but it was the same thing. And I walk in, and I'm looking for the Ernest Hemingway grave, and the park ranger's like, "Want to put a shotgun in your mouth? Do it over there."
My favorite detail of his death is that he bought that shotgun at Abercrombie and Fitch.
Did he? From a shirtless male model?
They should advertise that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really should. Bunch of shirtless dudes with a shotgun. Yeah.
I went to, I visited Dean Koontz's grave. And it's very haunted.
Wow.
It's two-thirds the size energy. Of Stephen King's grave.
Will, did you want to play?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I really do. Patton, I want to share with you now, back to the loser sauce gate. Yeah. I want to play for you now. We found this yesterday. This
sadness
is
jelly, I like to call it.
This is the best reaction I've seen to the Rick and Morty sauce gate. Hold on, let me get this queued up.
And so if you look on this guy's timeline, he's like a vlogger, gamer type kid, and he was so enthusiastic about the sauce. He was tweeting about it all day.
I'm also 100% certain that he is a time-shifted Michael Rappaport.
Yeah, I like to call this kid Young Rappaport.
Young Rappaport.
Yeah.
Listen, let me tell you something, Josh A. I don't give a fuck about the song anymore. This motherfucking whole Szechuan sauce shit was terrible. The location they picked in Brooklyn said, "Oh yeah, we're gonna have the sauce to post in the stickers." I go there, wait 2 hours. No sauce. We never said. We were never picked to have the sauce. I don't even know why we're online, but we do have the stickers and the fucking posters. But you don't even know if you're going to get a poster or sticker about Szechuan sauce. Fucking honey mustard. Go scratch your ass, McDonald's. What the fuck?
Apparently they were giving out posters for their regular sauces.
For the
first thing. That is my favorite Michael Tolkien film ever. That was beautifully framed. He weighed in.
Well, he's a professional. These kids know how to do that.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
He's an auteur.
That was the video that turned me on their side, because if I went to McDonald's for any reason and I got poor service and they fobbed off a honey mustard poster to me, I would be
I'm just a fan. I'm just a fan of condiments in general.
That was to have that poster framed.
I've got a Rick and Morty fan, really. I'm just a big fan of new condiments.
I've got a rare 1991 mustard.
I wonder how many people who actually got the sauce were just condiment fans. They weren't even Rick and Morty.
Brother, you should have done a vlog when you were in Chicago, and they wouldn't serve you a Happy Meal.
Oh, this is an unfortunate story. There's a lot of ageism at McDonald's these days. You often have to go in with a child to acquire the Happy Meal, or pretend it's for a child. You can't just be a drunk man who wants an interesting toy, who wants the Moana toy, and can't eat large portions because of a stomach thing.
Because you're a bird.
We tried to get on the dark net for Virgil to get a child in short order, and the hotel Wi-Fi was just slow, and it was like,
here's the secret. When if you're in DC, this is a life hack. You go to Comet Ping Pong first. Then you go to McDonald's, and you'll get all the ones you want.
Though. I got really so excited
that's,
about them too.
That's pickup artistry.
But I think think about how upset and angry and disappointed the people who didn't get the sauce were. Think of that level of upset and sadness. Yeah. It compares in no way to the monumental, soul-crushing oblivion of ennui that must have been felt by everybody who actually got to taste it. Because there's no way it was any good.
Yeah. No.
There's no way it was any good. It's fucking McDonald's dipping sauce.
What you want.
It's like that would destroy my brain. To wait 2 hours for this shit, and it's like, oh yeah, it's like sweet and sour sauce. You get it at a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah, that's interesting, Matt, because you think we would have heard from someone who got the vaunted, chemical slurry.
Oh no, they'll take that to their fucking grave. The ones who got it, they'll never admit it was shitty.
No.
Viktor Frankl wrote that, In Pursuit of Meaning, is where we truly find happiness. And so I don't think the point of the sauce really matters. Second of all, Charles Murray posited that if IQs were on a graph going up, Rick and Morty fans, they have a high cluster around 110 to 180 genius level. And so you combine those two things, they actually, the point isn't the sauce. The point is the journey they went on.
Yeah. I love the sop of the condiment poster so much.
That's amazing.
My brother is an insane hockey fan, and one year for Christmas, I didn't know what to get him, and I got him a poster, and it's just this kind of generic drawing of it, and just says hockey, like, and he just... He openly said, "This is a shitty gift."
That's great.
Yeah, this sucks. He goes, "There's teams I follow. You could have asked me. I would have liked that." I went, "No, I mean, you like hockey." He goes, "Patton, this is like if I got you a poster that just said books to hang in your room. I read books."
Actually, listeners out there, we just got an office. What I would like for the office, if someone can track down, it was if you go to libraries, sometimes you can still see them. Yes. There is this promotion that like the U.S. library system, I got your association of librarians
with books. Yeah.
It was just celebs reading books, and it just said read.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah,
I want I the one that. With Nicolas Cage where he's reading Siddhartha.
Well, during the Kaepernick thing, where like people were proving a point by burning their merchandise, there were a lot of guys who were just burning shirts and hats that only said NFL on them.
So funny. Yeah.
And I want to see the internal life of somebody who like 3 years ago was like, yeah, I just really want that hat that says NFL. I just love the league. That's it.
Maybe they bought it for it. Like they were never really committed to the NFL, but they are committed to effigy, but like not that accurately.
They're just huge effigy fans.
The NFL hats are cheaper. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah,
cheaper to not have a branded thing on there.
And it's always a materialist explanation.
I have to
always
say that. I have the officials' uniforms because I just like the rules. You know,
I say I think that. That Slavoj Žižek is mostly full of shit at this point in his career, but I want to hear talk about this because his Lacanian analysis could not be more perfectly suited to this sad pursuit of this. You see, the sauce is, it is the unrealizable, libidinal desire that which structures for reality but could not be engaged with personally.
The sauce is the lacuna in the center of the desire.
Yes. Yes, it is the unreachable middle. Yeah.
That video of him in the Criterion Vault.
Oh, that's
picking
good.
Picking out his favorite films and you realize...
It's what I like very much.
Yeah. But it's just films that just make him more... He likes films that... would upset other people. That's why he likes them. Like, clearly that's what he's picking.
Very edgy. I mean, that's his thing, he's an antagonistic person.
I'm sick of people, like, giving him airtime just because he's hot.
Look, I don't want to spout this old cliche, but how... Could you imagine the Szechuan sauce energy harnessed into... a small congressional race where you could literally flip. I mean, you could flip districts with this energy, but how do you make a congressional race, which is a grueling day-to-day thing, make it seem like a fun, nostalgic mission?
Well, first of all,
I think if you had a candidate that was at least maybe one-tenth as emotionally validating as Rick and Morty.
I don't think they should set you on sauce to the polls.
I may not be Rick and Morty, but you need an IQ of a certain level to enjoy me.
What if candidates have to be nostalgic characters? You have to run as Rick.
That's the way it goes.
You have to run as Uncle Jesse or something.
Yeah. Or frame the race as some kind of net, like I'm Burt Reynolds in Cannonball Run.
We're past the point of metaphor, though, so you would have to dress up like him.
That's
not a joke. But that's going to happen.
Yes.
That is what Donald Trump did, He's dressed as an 80s businessman.
Yes. Yes.
Remember the cocaine days when everyone was making all that money?
That was fun.
And when half of his like elderly base is dead in 2020, he's he's going to go like I'm Nickelodeon Gak. Believe me, I can't get out of your carpet. Okay. Look, I actually don't really know what Gak is.
It's like it was.
It's like slime. It's Nickelodeon proprietary.
Oh yeah. Okay, okay.
Kids love slime.
Patton, this is what Matt was musing about. We did a political panel yesterday, and he was musing that the Rick and Morty outrage people are the spearhead of a new militant movement, because right after, you know, right as all of this stuff was going down, they were fashioning hashtags, boycott McDonald's. They were contacting McDonald's customer service, much like people fucking contact you know, Lisa Murkowski.
Because really, like if this system cannot get you fake nostalgic sauce from a cartoon, then it has no efficacy. It has no advantage. It has
no
appeal.
It's the one thing
appeal.
It promised. It was the one thing, it promised.
Absolute frippery, absolute marginalia, just billions of dollars of carbon and fucking fossil fuels being put to the use of making absolute shit. Useless garbage that we are able, in our, you know, distressed mindscape, to clamp onto and feel, give meaning to, and find, like, turn them into talismans. We turn this, like, just refuse into talismans. And you can't even give us the little gigaws. You can't even give us the little trinkets. You know, it's like if a bunch of medieval peasants had gone to a reliquary to see, like, Pope Eustace's shinbone, and it wasn't there.
Yeah.
They would burn down the fucking cathedral.
Yeah.
I think they used to give us, like, you know, it's like the Capuchin monkey experiments. They used to give us at least the terry cloth mother. Now they've taken away.
We had at least the terry cloth mother, and now we don't
have it. Provided no nourishment, but it did provide comfort, and now we no longer have the terry cloth mother.
Wait a minute, does this all collapse when Ready Player One comes out? Because that is then we're done at that point. That's nostalgia eating. In that movie, it looks like the monster is nostalgia. Yeah. It looks like he's made a Jaws movie where the shark is nostalgia.
Yeah, it's going to eat your brain. You will be destroyed by it. You'll be by the end of it, you'll just be a gibbering maniac like Sam Neill at the end of the Mouth of the Madness. Just going, I recognize that. I know that that's from. I know what that's from. And that's all you are anymore. You're just a machine that only purpose is to recognize things that it's seen before. Yeah.
I'm more afraid that his follow-up novel, Armada, is just the plot of The Last Starfighter.
And, no, it
and
is.
Nobody's noticed that.
It is.
Nobody's talking about this, folks. Folks, how stupid are we? There was a movie called The Last Starfighter already.
I'll tell you one thing that I was not ready for after the first punch of the Rick and Morty Szechuan sauce gate was to then see Marvel ally with Northrop.
Oh my God! Yes.
Yes,
is going on. What the fuck?
That's just
what happened.
That's right. Marvel announced a partnership with Northrop Grumman to create like a group of superheroes who were going to fight with the Avengers.
And they are, and it's Northrop Grumman employees as superheroes.
And it's like their power is the technology.
People are doing mergers in fantasy worlds.
I swear to God.
And their powers would be the defense technology created by Northrop Grumman.
This isn't some like one off thing like the Avengers meet Shoney Bear for Shoney's Restaurant.
When Spider Man would eat the Hostess cookie in the back of the book.
This is going to be an ongoing. This isn't one of those host things like, how do we defeat the trickster? Well, Northrop Grumman, you know, and then he's happy.
We just drone strike the Green Goblin.
Yeah, no, they literally, this is going to be in the universe.
Yeah, we have new characters. But the thing is, it's like, it's really just this, it's one part of this the Trump era. I think the one thing that defines it culturally is just metaphors dying, metaphorical language dying, the real sort of rising to the surface. All of the artifice melting, because what was Tony Stark originally, if not sort of a Northrop Grumman dream, like a fucking defense contractor who uses all of this high technology stuff to save the world, do signature strikes.
The pilot is the jet.
Right.
Come.
And so now we're taking, because that was sort of, it was on the ideological level, like pro defense state, pro military industrial complex. We can use this stuff for good.
Yeah.
Technology is our friend. We have to engage with the world by blowing it up. And now we've taken that subtext and made it text, because now it's literally Northrop Grumman. It's a real, one of the pictures they had, it was fantasy and it was Stark headquarters, and next to it said reality and it was Northrop Grumman headquarters.
Some lefty.
They fucking put that out there.
Some lefty cultural critic who just handed in his big manuscript showing that the propaganda value for empire of modern comic books is just so pissed right now. Just threw it into a fireplace.
Oh my God, wait a minute. What if, hang on, wait, I'm sorry. I might have been wrong earlier when I said that all this post-capitalism economic anxiety is defining our pop culture.
Folks, we have a correction.
I think No, it is a lack of abstract thought. Trump, and you've talked about this, about he has no there's no abstract thought. Mm-hmm. There's no
if they say we need transparency in the wall, he thinks you have to look through the wall.
So
he's a hyper-literalist.
Maybe that is what's going to happen. There will be no more irony or meta distance to anything. It'll just be right there.
Yes,
that's
really what I've felt since he won, is just the dissolving of metaphorical language.
Yeah,
like that whole allegory, all of that is dead. We just have this weird concrete background.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's oval, so you can't really...
Yeah.
I mean, if someone's looking in the window...
That one, I still think about that one sometimes.
There's no
George W. Bush said, you can nowhere to hide. And he's like, yeah, there's no corners or anything.
If someone's out of the window...
If there's somebody in the window...
I mean, I guess I was in there, and he goes, well, he meant it all comes back to you. I understand that.
It's a world... It's sort of like the invention of lying, only instead of we can't lie, we cannot use any kind of abstract language.
The invention of metaphor.
Yeah, we're all Amelia Bedelia.
Oh, my God. I'm reading those to my daughter right now. She loves those.
Used to it,
but Amelia—that's
the future. It's going to be like
my God, I'm preparing her.
It's going to be like Pontypool, only you're just going to lose all of your metaphors.
Amelia Bedelia was a damn documentary.
Yeah,
forget Idiocracy.
I think
yesterday's
Michael Flynn is the most Amelia Bedelia out of the entire administration. I feel
it's going to be adorable. It's going to be the most adorable nuclear holocaust you've ever seen.
Michael Flynn is avoiding nuclear holocaust by lobbying for literally every government on earth.
And, you know? And the thing is, the real scary part is that it is fucking this whole weird hallucinatory hyper reality is really spreading even beyond Trump, because I made fun a couple weeks ago of the fact that when he was yelling at the NFL players, he had three tweets in a row. One was, NFL players, they need to stand. Disrespectful. Then, if North Korea keeps talking smack, we're going to kill them all. Then, NFL players, what the hell? Mm. He just
it's
sandwiched.
It's all the same to him.
Yeah, it's all
you know
the same.
What? It's called multitasking, and he learned about it from Oprah.
But
4D chess, man.
Going back to the Szechuan gate, journalist Kurt Eichenwald.
Friend of the show.
Yesterday had a tweet where he said, can no one stop POTUS? He is going to launch a first strike against North Korea. We need him to be constrained. An hour later, he replies to McDonald's. Says,
replies to the official McDonald's account, which
Ronald McDonald.
That said, McDonald's, the official McDonald's account said, the best fans in the multiverse showed us what they got today. We hear you, and we're sorry not everyone could get some super limited Szechuan. And Kurt responds, wow, who's getting fired for this bonehead move? Jerry? I don't care either way, but I know Rick and Morty fans are hardcore, and thousands would show.
He is the first mainstream media figure to endorse the nascent Rick and Morty militant revolutionary tendency.
He's going to tie it to being a poster. But yeah, an hour before that, he was worried that we were going to have a first strike on North Korea and nuclear Armageddon. It's the same thing as the fucking Szechuan sauce.
Rick and Morty fans will be the soccer moms or Rahawa dads of the 2020 election.
Mark Penn needs to get on that. It's like, we got the NASCAR uncles, we got the Rick and Morty incels, and we're going to get that coalition and we're going to win back the White House.
Kurt Eichenwald, he's breaking out his Tor, his Darknet use. He's getting back in the game. He's going undercover as a child to email McDonald's. I tried to get out, but they pulled me back in. The tentacles pulled me back in.
Also, Kurt, this bugs me a lot, but Kurt made a Rick and Morty reference in that tweet, and
he
bungled it, though. It was like, who's getting fired for that? Jerry?
Well,
Jerry. As
not...
if Jerry works at McDonald's?
Yeah.
Nah,
yeah. What, it doesn't work.
Well, my favorite part of it is that he clearly shows he's a fan of the show,
because
he's a freaking
high
IQ.
He's a fan of animation.
He's a fan
in general.
Of all kinds of animation.
Love animation.
Yeah. Yep, yep.
I actually think
the tentacles
it's a fine
of animation
show.
Will always pull you in to that wonderful
He also
world.
Has to say, I don't care either way. And I'm thinking, you know what, Kurt? I bet you're on that line.
Well,
you?
What I like is
he's
clearly a fan of the show, and he's like, well, you know, they are the smartest people, too.
He is absolutely drafting a lawsuit against McDonald's.
True Facts Stated is making the connection between Trump and Putin and the sauce. It's like, we actually have intel. We have intel.
It's the Sino-Russian sauce connection.
We have Sync Int and Humint indicating that Putin
purchased all of our reserves of Szechuan peppers, making it impossible for McDonald's to fulfill its pledge to its customers and sowing more division and chaos in America.
Folks,
which is all
China.
He does.
Matt, it's like, China. It's Russia.
This is like this is going to be an example of one of these things where we will another thing into being. There is going to be like a mega thread on Twitter connecting Russia to Szechuan Gate.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Probably in T-minus 1 hour. Yeah. Someone's going to do it.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. 1960 Sino-Soviet split. Follow along.
The one thing, and maybe you guys can reassure me because I do have my paranoid moments too, where if you look at Trump, and I hate that I'm even going down this road, but if you look at Trump psychologically, he's so clearly this guy that every new thing he gets money-wise will make him happy, and it does not.
Yeah.
And maybe we will start a nuclear war because he craves the release of annihilation.
Oh, he does.
There is
no, his
that
death
totally,
drive is incredibly strong.
Yeah, exactly.
He's basically admitted it. You remember that interview years ago where he said, my favorite song, is that all there is? Because you get my money and you make a deal, and then you think, is that all there is?
Okay, well, then that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Because somebody with that, I've known people.
Pleasureless
hunger. Yeah, I've known people just at the level of show business. Forget world leaders or billionaires. That if I get this TV series, if I get this, you know, and then they're just miserable.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what they, I've had friends who've had, they'll get a sitcom and they're like, it's the number, I'm number five. What the fuck? This is bullshit. And then like, well, and then they get to be number one. You go, you're the number one sitcom. They go, yeah, how fucking long is this going to last? And then it's number one for 9 weeks. Then it drops to number two and they go, I told you. And they're just never. So imagine that metastasized into Trump.
Yeah.
This 70-year-old.
Yeah. Who is so narcissistic that.
And miserable.
The thing that keeps. Presumably, the thing that stopped us from dying in the Cold War is people really, in moments of high tension, reflecting on the actual cost of what that would be.
And reflecting on the future.
Those people who would die mean literally nothing to him. No one outside of himself means anything.
His family literally means nothing to him. He raised his kids to try to bully one of his daughters out of the will.
Yeah.
He would throw the others under the bus in a second.
He
would want, in a really creepy way, he wants to destroy the world so it's just him and Ivanka.
Yeah.
I'm not...
No.
His fantasy.
Like, there is that narcissistic thing within all of us, I think, of not wanting to miss anything when you die. Like that's why you crave the apocalypse.
Yes.
That's why apocalypse is so culturally relevant.
Because we all
you
want to
die at the end. You don't want to die.
And that's the ultimate narcissist nightmare. It's the Louis C.K. joke of, is there life after death? Yeah, there is. You're just not part of it. It just keeps going, and that drives people crazy. Yeah,
because I don't want to be like, oh, I'm going to die, and then there's going to be fucking flying cars and shit after I die. And like, it's going to be Star Trek, and I don't get to see it. That's bullshit. All has to end with me. But to have the ability to make that happen and be as narcissistic and shallow and deeply miserable as Trump, it is scary.
Somebody accidentally said the phrase to him, every 100 years, all new people. And that is like, wait a minute, people are going to forget me? No, that's impossible. It ends with me.
Yeah.
This entire evolution, it ends with Donald Trump.
It's the only way to validate his existence.
It's the only, because nothing else has.
Yeah, well, because he's not, president and he thought that'd be great, but people are still mean to him. Very unfair. Yeah.
And he's only capable of very brief libidinal delight, not actual happiness.
Exactly,
probably the luckiest, most successful American of all time who fell ass backwards into the leader of the free world. And he's still totally anhedonic.
Between ability and reward, basically, of all time.
It's just like once a week they give him like a flag or something to cut or something to sign or he can drive a truck and then he gets excited for like 3 minutes. He's pure joy and then it's gone.
Sitting in that truck.
And all the people that he wants around him do not want anywhere. Like it's Ted Nugent and it's these shitty country bands that he hates. By the way, it's not that he wants Eddie Vedder to be hanging out with him. He hates all music. He doesn't care.
Yeah.
He just, whoever's the top selling, I want them to hang out. Yeah. That's all I care about.
This is interesting. I wanted to bring up the fact that he was complaining the other day and seeming to imply that like Congress should get involved in like mandating equal jokes like that are nice to him on late night TV. Amazing. So he's like,
he
wants a comedian fairness doctrine.
Yes.
For late night TV shows, and I really hope Congress gets him. I want
to see that show. Show would be. I don't watch any of those shows, but if on Kimmel or Seth Meyers, they have to do a Trump joke, and then they have to turn to the other camera and be like.
Unemployment is down 3.5%.
I was thinking more like it would be a new deal, but for like Steven Crowder specifically. It's like, all right, we're spending $30 billion a year on dresses for Steven Crowder to prove that the liberals are gay or something. Okay.
No, I love like how I love how Crowder is so obsessed with his hatred of Amy Schumer, and you can trace it. It's so simple. Yep. She was on Red Eye with him and said, by the way, you're not a comedian. She just said it, and she wasn't even being mean. She's like, if I went fishing once a year, I couldn't go. I'm also a fisherman. You go perform. He's the Mother 13 of comedians. Have you ever heard that sketch on The Best Show? It's this band called Mother 13. They just perform for corporate events. They're just huge. And like, oh, are you kidding? We were at the Pringles Earthlink Summer Slam Jam. We were on the third stage, which is the stage outside the parking lot. And they have no one's actually going to see them. They just so of course the person that quietly finally just no, you're actually not a comedian anyway, and then goes back to talking about other things.
Yeah, every single
of course you're gonna be obsessed.
Every single audience that Steve Crowder has ever performed for was bust in.
But yeah,
from
bust
a retirement
in
home.
Or they were there for something else anyway.
Yeah,
they weren't there to see him. Yeah. They're well, like, if you, oh, before the thing starts, you came. Here's this guy.
Or if you've seen him, like he does do gigs at like colleges and stuff, but it's like it's brutal. It's just like,
oh, I watch all of those. I watched the O'Reilly like monologue series, shall we say?
Yeah.
And like they would turn to shots of the crowd. It's impossible to find now. He had everyone who saw it killed.
Yeah.
So I might go missing.
They died. They killed themselves.
That's why he liked his hospice care audiences. Literally every 2 weeks, new people.
And also what I love about all these guys, all these failed comedians have become, they metastasize showbiz failure with hatred of the left because But what's so hilarious is it wasn't showbiz failure. It was they weren't immediately successful. Yeah. Like when my first 4 years of comedy was just death. Like it was not because you have to work at it for a long time.
Yeah.
And the fact that they tried something and weren't immediately rewarded, and they went, oh, well then fuck, I'm conservative. Like all these guys, you can see it over and over and over again.
So they accuse libs of being that, oh, it's a gratification culture.
Yes.
When your participation trophy, guess what? You got to pull up your bootstraps. Work a little bit harder, but as soon as they don't personally get their own fulfillment through their horrible comedy right away, it's like, oh, this is the libs' fault.
And I remember a lot of these guys when I was starting out in DC back in the 80s, a lot of these guys have now become conservative commentators or people that I have to block on Facebook because they didn't quite push through and became like, yeah, well, fuck Hollywood.
Yeah, but that's the thing is you can imagine if you have in your mind been done wrong by the entertainment industry.
Totally.
That you're going to identify that with the left because they're all liberals. And
yes.
And then they're like, oh, there's uniquely bad elites. But it's like, actually, yes, they're all scumbags who run Hollywood, but everybody who runs everything is a scumbag.
Right.
It's like the Harvey Weinstein thing. Like all these smug conservatives like, yeah, look at all. Yeah, Harvey Weinstein's a monster who is abetted by this awful system where also, if you're at the top, you can do whatever you want. But that's true of literally every industry.
Yeah, but also, Harvey Weinstein is a fucking monster who's not in control of nukes. He makes pretend shows. Yes, he's doing awful things. Yeah. And I, you know, I believe the women that are coming against it. I tweeted yesterday, I'm like, hey, MAGA douchebags. I believe the women that are accusing your guy is still a rapist and a predator, and he's the fucking president.
Yeah.
Does that you don't
well,
see
that? What's so crazy is that they think like his response was, "Oh yeah, I'm totally not surprised." When they asked Trump about Weinstein, he said, "Doesn't surprise me at all." And the thing is, these guys like to think that he's some sort of crusader against this predatory elite like Pizzagate people. But he time and again has said, oh, yeah, those sex perverts, I was their friend for many years.
And it's like, do you hundreds think that, of pictures of him with Harvey Weinstein.
Do you think that it was like a fucking Infernal Affairs thing where he went deep undercover among rich perverts so that he could become president and then turn the tables on them by like making a catty comment after they get brought down by other people? He's just as much of a he has a human zoo, probably.
Yeah,
he's
any of them. I found this article from like 1998 about Jeffrey Epstein, and the only poll quote in there is from Donald Trump, and he goes, Jeffrey is a great friend of mine. It's rumored he likes women even younger than me. And it's like, he's like just openly being like, yeah, I do Pizzagate. It's great.
I was having deep thoughts in the shower the other day about this. So like, you know, Weinstein or like Roger Ailes or Donald Trump, and everyone's just sort of going back and forth about like Democrats and Republicans, who has more sexual predators as major donors or figures in their media. And I was like, it struck me for a moment that it's been almost just completely evaporated from our sort of like public imagination and consciousness that Dennis Hastert was third in line to the presidency for like almost a decade.
He was the longest serving GOP House Speaker of the House ever. And just huge pervert.
Okay, okay. Oh, let me
Chomo Maxima.
I want to defend my fellow Illinois
and wrestler.
Okay, so okay. We were just talking about Wonder Woman and how good it is for girls to have heroes. What if you're a morbidly obese child molester? Who do you have to look up to? This is why these people are important. Representation is important.
Yeah, it's like I too can sell subs or be Speaker of the House.
Little Illinois inside baseball.
We will not be free until we have a diehard where a pedophile is the hero, and and his pedophilia is what saves the day.
Little Illinois inside baseball.
Yeah.
Hastert had one very big patron, and it was Jim Oberweis, literally an ice cream baron.
This is a Roald Dahl story.
Yes.
I'm just imagining. I'm just imagining the pedophile John McClane jumping off the roof of the Nakatomi Tower with a bunch of nappies tied together, and crashing through the window.
No, let me ask you guys, because I, you know, as a political, but it's a comedic podcast, but it's also very, very political. Because I know all the writers on Veep, and how you do the show. You record the show once a week. Twice a week.
Yeah.
So are there things where if you're covering something that's just broken, but you know with Trump, something will happen and then wait 2 days and it goes the opposite direction. Yep. So has that been kind of built into the comedy and the discussion at this point, like, and we know that this will also go because it's exhausting to keep up with this shit.
We try not to react too quickly.
Yeah, he is sour cream in a sauna. You can't. it just turns so immediately. You gotta, wait a second. I've never
heard that phrase.
Oh, he's Patton is saying
that's what they used to call me in college.
Sour cream in a sauna. Patton is saying that he's thick.
Well, yeah. The thing is you sort of. It would be if we had to contextualize every story in what like the most recent iteration and knowing that it was going to change in the next five, we would have a hard time. The good news is that we sort of assume that the audience has a baseline context for everything we talk about. Yeah. And we sort of let that do the work. And so we basically just respond to what is happening in front of us.
Also, we don't really respond right away. Instead, we make up something way more fucked up and stupid, and then that happens the next day.
Like pedophile diehard.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're on time.
Yeah, we often get scooped on those predictions. I just want to make one for the record that I think Trump will comment on the Szechuan sauce thing. and I think it will lead him to watch Rick and Morty, and it will become a Flowers for Algernon type thing, and becomes a genius president. And he solves all of our problems, but he becomes worse in a different aspect.
Oh, yeah, he's going to be an I fucking love science guy.
Yes.
Oh
yes.
My
he's
God.
Going to get a Neil deGrasse Tyson over
he's
the other direction.
He's going to fix global warming by building some sort of machinery.
He's going to become an Imgurian.
Yeah. Oh, he will be an Imgur. He's going to post all the Imgur memes that me and Virgil have hate read for 5 years. Like the condescending.
Because you're smart.
Yes.
Folks, there's a comic out there. You got to check it out. It's a comic. It's called XKCD. It's got all the stuff. It's amazing. They're stick figures, but they know a lot of stuff.
Condolences to the Control-Alt-Delete man for losing his beautiful infant. We need to fix Obamacare.
I think that's as good a place as any to wrap it up. Patton, thanks so much for joining us.
So happy to be here. You have
no idea.
This is
a lot of fun, man.
It's been amazing.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Cheers, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.